Okay, here we go. Invite. Oh, hey, Phil. Let me see if I can get. Let me try again.
Ah.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. Okay. My God, you look amazing.
Thank
Wait,
you.
Wait, that's a combination. You did a combination of yours and my.
Yes, this is the Fearless
Honestly,
turban and the gray beanie sleeper. I just wanted to do a little razzle dazzle.
Oh my God, you just took beanie sleeper. Like, I thought it was here. You took it to like here. I'm like, I love it. And you look amazing. And thank you. Let me do my little, first of all, I'm so glad you're here, but let me do my little intro.
Sure.
Then we're going to dive right in.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. You completely blew my mind right now.
Oh.
So anyway, hi everyone. I am Ben. I'm the founder and creator of Beanie Sleeper, the beanie with a built-in, with an integrated sleep mask that blocks light and keeps your head warm and comfy without overheating. Let me put mine on. I have to put my beanie sleeper on because, one, I might fall asleep. I'm not going to fall asleep, but afterwards. No.
I wouldn't blame you.
Oh, God, I never did. But this is actually the beanie sleeper I wear every night. So I love it.
The blue one, is that
anyway,
your favorite color?
It is my favorite color. It is my, but this is, I like literally, I think I've worn this thing down. I love it. I wear it all the time. Anyway, welcome to a very special episode of Sleeping with Ben, the chat show where I talk to interesting people in search of why they do what they do. My guest today is Sonia Keshwani, breast cancer survivor and creator of Style Esteem Wardrobe. Literally the place to buy the most gorgeous turbans on the web, as you can see. That thing is beautiful. and
you.
Also, you have, is this your motto? I found this. Breathe, slay, repeat. Is that like your motto, or I found it in a tweet or something?
Yeah, that is. I think that's one of them because honestly, it's this. It's kind of in combination with this idea that every day you wake up, you are going out into the world. It's a new part of your long story that is your life, and you know you have the chance every day to wake up and to just kill it and to have you know simple things like. Fashion that makes you feel beautiful and confident, be part of that. So that's kind of part of the recipe, I think, is help, you know, having these little things help you feel your best and look your best so you can do your best.
I absolutely love, I mean, we'll get on to something else, but I absolutely love that you started with breathe. Mm-hmm. Breath is like, how often do we forget to breathe? Do we let things wash over us when literally a simple breath, would put things into a little bit more perspective. It's so, I mean, breathing is key. And then I love how it's like, it's not breathe and hold, it's breathe and slay.
Yeah.
Like deep breath and go.
Go.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So your intro was literally two sentences. There is, tell me something in your intro I didn't mention. Because I said breast cancer survivor, so we will talk about that. And I said creator of Style Esteem Wardrobe, which is freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
You have one child?
Oh, I don't have any. I have my cat.
You don't have any children?
She is right here.
I'm a cat. You're a cat mom. I'm a
cat mom. Yes, I'm newly married.
Oh, I love
it. I'm a cat mom. And
you know what?
I
remember.
My company's my baby.
It is newly married. I knew there was something new. I remember we chatted before, and I was like, okay, she's newly married. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so. I want to ask you, I'm going to dive right in, but I really want to know, because you were diagnosed at 29, is that right?
Yes, correct.
But what were you doing before with your life? How was your life, like 3-4 years before you were diagnosed, what was that like?
Sure, yeah, and this is something I think I would have mentioned, like, as part of the intro, what's something that people don't normally know about me, or wouldn't really assume about me. And that's that my background is not in fashion. I didn't get started, you know, in a fashion position, didn't go to fashion school, none of that. I was actually well back into my childhood, it's something that I was interested in and something that I wanted to do is become a haute couture mm-hmm. designer. But my parents encouraged me to go to college and at least earn a degree that would be a good fallback in case fashion doesn't work out. You know,
the parent thing, fallback.
Immigrant mentality. Very wise. Very wise. I didn't appreciate it at the time. I'm not going to lie, but
right.
I very much appreciate taking that advice now. And so I ended up in Washington, D.C., studying international affairs. And then following.
Really?
Yeah, it's another thing that I was passionate about being, a Muslim, being a New Yorker, having grown up during 9/11. It's something that I really wanted to kind of get involved with and make a difference in, which was, public service, international affairs, and that sort of thing. So I ended up studying that very subject at the George Washington University, earned my master's mm-hmm. at Georgetown, had a long career in government, and towards about the 10-year mark of that time in Washington, D.C., I developed breast cancer. I was working in one of the most challenging jobs of my life, kind of what I thought was my dream job. I was in public affairs. I was in this very, high-profile role, and I developed this, illness, and then I kind of have my eyes open to other possibilities.
Let me ask you something before we go there. I'm really curious. You were in government service.
Yeah.
Have you always been of service? Was that as a child, were you like that? I mean, because I've noticed there's a pattern with some people I interview is that these things just don't happen. There's
That's
like
true.
This beginning. So I'm just wondering when did the service part of yourself start? How far back can you remember that you were being of service?
So service is something that was ingrained in me from the values that I was given from when I was brought up. So since day one, I would say, because that is something that is a very big part of our religious community. And it's something that we practice a lot of for each other. And also for those who are outside of our community, we give back a lot. Giving yourself in service, acts of service, is a very, very big thing where I come from. So it's definitely something that inspired me to go into government. And then also when I started Stylosteam to do the one-for-one donation program where we give a turban back for each that we sell.
I love that. I'm just fascinated with the idea that you discovered service so early. It was ingrained in you by your family, by your parents, and by your religious background.
Yeah.
I think that's really amazing. This might be a weird question, but who were your heroes growing up?
Oh my goodness, this is something.
I know.
oh my goodness, I think it's really changed quite a bit over time. I think I used to idolize champion figure skaters and pop stars and the whole gamut. But if you would ask me today, it's really become very specific. I really idolize the founder of Spanx, Sarah Blakely. I idolize the artistic prowess of Lady Gaga. There's a few of those very powerful women that I've really come to relate to. And I think that this is a really important point because I, for the longest time, actually had a hard time pinpointing who it is that I idolize in a very authentic way. And that's because I don't think I was really on the right path for myself where I was able to, pinpoint what I want and then pinpoint who I idolize in that sort of process to get to where I want to be. And this is really the first time in my life where I can actually give you specifics about who I idolize in a meaningful way.
I got to tell you, I'm really much the same way. I look back at my childhood and, of course I love my parents, but I never idolized them. I didn't think of them as heroes. I look back now and I say what they did was very heroic.
Yeah.
Because I understand now as a grown-up, I understand the sacrifices they made for me so that I could be here today. But it really was... I completely am with you. When I grew older and knew more about what I wanted to do, I was able to kind of pick and choose my heroes.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't happen to me. I let them in because I valued things that they valued. So I think that's really amazing. So let me just say this. Prior to your cancer diagnosis, if that never happened, do you think you'd still be on the government track?
Yeah, I think my life would be so different. And when I say so different, I mean completely different. I would have probably still been in D.C. I might have still been in that path, trying to find my way, trying to find the thing that makes me more passionate than stressed out. I don't know where my personal life would have been. I certainly wouldn't have met my husband. That happened after I moved back home to New York City and you know, launched my community, my company. So, I think it would have been so different. I feel like I still would have been trying to find that path back into fashion, whether through blogging or photography, like I was trying to do before, but it wouldn't have been that very sort of niche thing, which is, what does this mean? I always wanted to kind of find my way back into fashion, but in a way that meant something that provided value to the world, that sort of made a difference in the lives of people, not just creating, you know, just visually pleasing things, but something that made a difference.
You said something, you just said a hint of something I thought was very interesting. You said something, and then you said me, something that was valuable to me, and you put you in the equation.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people don't do, we feel like we can't do.
Yeah.
It's putting me in the equation. You know, I'm doing other things for other people, which is great. But still, there's a self-fulfillment aspect to what you're doing now that I don't know if you actually felt as a government person, but maybe you did. But it seems like it's much more, it's deeper now.
Yeah, I think when I was in my previous career, I was very much focused on the greater good, period, full stop.
Right.
But now I feel like I have the chance, and this is, I think, largely because I'm working for myself. I have the chance to explore a lot of the things that I spent a lot of time getting good at, right? Like the communications aspect of what I do, the creativity aspect of what I do, because I have full autonomy. So all those things that I spent a lot of money learning at Georgetown and then, you know, fine tuning in the government, I can now actually just exercise it any which way I want. And that's kind of cool. Yeah.
It's amazing. So take me back to you're 29 and what happened, like the day before and then the day after? What happened? What were you doing the day before your diagnosis and then your world changed?
Yeah. You know, I was actually traveling and I was meeting up with my parents at a community event. I was out of town in Atlanta, and so I got there like a few days early to spend time with some family that I hadn't seen in a while and to wait for my parents to come in. And as I'm getting ready to go out and meet my parents, I'm taking a shower, I'm getting dressed. And that's when I discover the lump in my breast. And I was just kind of in shock because I feel like I would know what's going on with my body. And this is like something that I didn't see coming. It wasn't something that I noticed, like getting a lot of people, like they'll notice something and they'll monitor it and it'll get bigger over time. Then they'll go to the doctor. For me, it was like going from nothing to like a lump, you know? So I was definitely concerned because that wasn't normal for me. A lot of women do get cysts in their breasts. That wasn't my case. This was just out of the blue for me at that age. And so basically I told my mom, you know, as soon as I saw her that day, like, hey, this is what's happening. She was working for an oncologist at the time as a, as an office manager. And so I knew she was like familiar with I knew she was familiar with people who are going through this, and she checked it. And, you know, her boss was also going to happen to be at this event. And so, you know, we were like, okay, well, hopefully we can find him. We can look for him there. And we were able to get in touch with him. He checked me out and basically was like, look, you're very young. You have dense breasts and you don't have any family history. So I don't think this is something to lose sleep over. I would go and get your checkups, come up to New York. I'll write you a referral, go get your checkups done, you know, go with your mom and just take it from there. And so that's what I did. And I really, you know, I think I had a feeling that something was off and that it would be more than just like cysts or like benign cysts. But I said, fine, like I'll try to stay calm until then. So prior to this happening, I was just living my life, you know, kind of.
I mean, you didn't feel sick, did you?
I did not. And that's kind of the worst part, I think, in a lot of people's experiences, that you don't really start to feel sick until you are in treatment and the treatment makes you feel like death.
Oh my God.
So that was really horrible. That was the worst I've ever felt in my life, is during chemo.
And I think, I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but there was no history in your family of breast cancer?
Yeah, I mentioned that. I'm the first one to have breast cancer or even ovarian cancer for that matter, because sometimes if there's ovarian cancer, there may be some kind of more apparent link, like a genetic link, but there wasn't. And I was the first, and I actually come to find out I have a rare mutation, which has not yet been documented in my family, because basically everyone before my parents grew up in India, and over there the documentation is very poor, especially before their generation. There's barely, I mean, birth certificates are hard to come by. So genetic mutations,
somebody might have had breast cancer, but there's no documentation. So nobody would know. You know what? I'm just going to do a little side note here, because that happened in my family. My father had a rare neuromuscular disease called Charcot-Marie-Tooth.
Okay.
He was diagnosed when he was 29. And when all of us kids, all of us when I was six, that's when they started taking us in for testing. Not genetic tests, but testing, because nobody knew where this came from. We looked so far back in my dad's family, and we didn't. So it turned out to be some anomaly that happens. And I think that's kind of like the crazy thing about disease is that there's not always a full line of how it goes. It just can be random. And I think that's what's so scary about it and almost annoying is that it's just so random.
Yeah. It's like, up until now, no one had it. And why am I the first, you know? Why,
and then,
why do
and
I
now
have to start the trend? I like starting trends, but not this one.
but this is not one. So you're diagnosed. What stage did they diagnose you at?
So I was diagnosed as an early stage breast cancer, stage one. They, you know, I was kind of at the border where, like, had I waited a little bit longer, I probably would have had a bigger tumor. But because I was, you know, I found it, I was very vigilant. I thank goodness had someone who believed me when I told them I was having symptoms. A lot of doctors, sometimes if you're young enough or whatever, they'll, you know, they'll say that, you know, this is probably nothing to worry about and kind of leave it there. I had someone who was very proactive right along with me and helped me get the testing that I needed. And so it was, you know, found early and, you know, we were able to start kind of tackling it on the early end. So it was stage one.
That's amazing. Okay, so you're diagnosed, and then the process starts.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the process? What kind of treatment do they say you have to go through? Was it chemo radiation? Was it just, what was the surgery? Yeah. What was the process?
Sure. So the way that this changes your lifestyle is so dramatic. I was living and working full-time in DC, and I decided to get my treatment done in New York because that's where my family is. I have a very young sister. I didn't want my mom traveling back and forth to take care of me in DC and then have to worry about my sister back in New York. And so I decided I like being in New York. I like being closer to my family. I'll travel back and forth every 3 weeks for treatment. Before treatment started, I had to do a bunch of traveling to do all the diagnostic tests, all the biopsies, scans, MRIs, ultrasounds, everything. And often I would have, you know, I would come up and I would have days where I'm just back to back bouncing from borough to borough, going to appointments. And so, so it was a very dehumanizing experience. I began to feel like just a body, you know, waiting for drugs, waiting for the next,
I gotta hold up. What was dehumanizing about? Was it that they were just pushing you through like an assembly line? There was no humanity about it?
I mean, no, my doctors were great. I think I encountered one single doctor where I really felt that way. And that's kind of a separate story, because that was like, you know, when you go through breast cancer, you have like so many different doctors. They become your team, from your oncologist to your medical surgeon to your plastic surgeon. And there was one doctor where I was like, I had all male doctors, and the plastic surgeon was like a referral, and he was a male. And I was like, I think I need to go with the female on this one. So that was the one where like I had to try and switch it out and go with my gut and get someone different. But other than that, I mean, it's kind of a dehumanizing experience without anyone treating you kind of weird, because you're just sitting on a hospital bed constantly getting poked and prodded, and in one hospital gown to another hospital gown. And you're basically being told what equation of things you can do to save yourself. This amount of chemo, this amount of, you know, extended therapy, this amount of radiation. And so you kind of just are like, oh my goodness, like, am I just like, this is all I am. And until I pass this test, wow. I'm nothing more, you know?
It's like for that length of time, it's like you literally were just the disease.
Kind of. That's like. How it felt.
You were just, and I'm wondering if that, if the doctors kind of have to do that so they don't get emotionally attached. I'm just wondering because, you know, I've been wanting to have a doctor on here because I want to ask them that. Yeah. How do you treat your patient?
Be
a human and still be, you know, be able to be subjective. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it.
I can't imagine. Yeah.
I just don't know how they do it. Yeah. So you get the treatment plan and you start chemo next.
Yeah. So I found the lump in March and by May I was already had my first round of chemo. And I had 6 rounds of chemotherapy, which lasted from May to August. And simultaneously, I had, because I had triple positive breast cancer, which is a hormone receptor positive breast cancer, you're able to get certain targeted therapies to, you know, kind of extend your chances of, you know, reducing your recurrence and having a longer life. Mm-hmm, and so that is actually also every 3 weeks, but that goes on for a year. So I was coming back and forth, shuttling back and forth for a year, doing that as well. So, 1 year of that, 6 rounds of the chemotherapy, surgery, like having the initial surgery, having the kind of the plastic surgery aspect of it, going back a number of times when things don't quite take the way they should. I think I've had like 3 surgeries for that. So,
wow. Can I ask you, this might be personal, and if you don't want to answer, you don't have to. It was just in the one breast. Did you opt for you did a mastectomy, is that correct?
Yeah.
Did you opt for the double or?
I did because at the end of the day, having a genetic mutation, I considered, you know, do I want to take my chances? And if I, you know, the desire to take my chances, which was definitely there, was not bigger than my desire to not be back in this position again. So I went with the more drastic option. And the treatment was very successful. The surgery was very successful. When they tried to tell me that I should go do radiation, at that point, I advocated to not take that step because there was nothing to radiate. And they kind of tried to pitch it to me like this is the protocol we generally tell people, especially of your age. And I said, well, I've done everything. And the results came back, you know, as good as one can expect. And so at this point, I'm going to start my journey to healing and recovering. I'm not going to do radiation.
So how far, I don't know how old you are right now, but how far removed are you from the initial diagnosis to now?
Sure. I'm 32 years old. So I'm coming up on year number 4.
Year number 4. And you go back every, 6 months for a test? Every 6 months until
I,
you
honestly,
5 years?
I go back like every 2-ish, 3 months for blood work. I have the option, I think, of spacing it out more, but I choose to go more often for my own peace of mind.
Yeah.
And then, I do go back for other medication, like every 3-4 months, depending on how my body is responding. If I need to go back sooner, I will. If I don't, you know, I'll extend that out. But yeah, I go back like relatively, I was there today, had my little blood work done.
Oh. So it's pretty much a constant in your life for at least the first, 5-10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think, you know, you have the option of going less frequently, but for me, it's a peace of mind thing. So it's reassuring for me to go more often than not, so.
So tell me, when did you, between diagnosis and now, when did Style Esteem first, I read on your website that it became apparent there was nothing beautiful out there when you lost your hair.
Yeah.
And I mean, between Etsy and Amazon, there's nothing you found beautiful. But what part of your journey did that happen? And from there, when did the idea that I can do this?
Yeah.
I'm going to make this thing. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I first started to realize this when my oncologist told me, hey, you're going to lose your hair by the time you come back for round number 2 of chemo. Just make sure you buy a wig and that you're prepared because when you start to lose it, it's going to go fast. So I said, fine. let me use this as a time to like maybe experiment. I'll go get a blonde wig. I'll see what that life is like. You know, I try to sort of take it in stride and like kind of like my usual spirit of like, hey, like maybe this is a time to find my new look or like, you know, have some fun with it. And I quickly realized like hair loss has a ton of side effects, like, you know, your skin feeling swollen and bruised, massive migraines, just like constant discomfort, not to mention hot flashes from the medication. And I was like, you know, I was traveling to my government office with my hair in a Ziploc bag in my purse. And I was like, this is too much. I can't do this right now. It was the dead of heat in Washington, D.C. in the summer. And I'm like, this is too much.
Miserable.
And traveling back and forth. So I was like, let me try to find more comfortable options. And when I couldn't find anything, I was like, you know what? I'm Indian, like, aren't Indians supposed to be gifted tailors or something? So let me go, maybe let me go find some fabric and see if I can do this thing. And so I actually ended up going to a mom and pop fabric shop near my infusion center in Astoria, Queens. And I would come back with a few yards of cloth each time I'd go. And I really had to play around with it because I had no background in sewing. But when I came up with certain styles that I liked and in fabrics that I could just kind of play around with and mix and match with different outfits, I found myself living my life a little bit more, having, doing the little things like going to the movies or going for a walk and not having to worry about a wardrobe malfunction on the top of my head. So when that happened and I finished out treatment and my hair started to come back, I realized kind of how much this had helped me in my journey. And around that same year in August, when I finished chemo, I started to then talk about my diagnosis and talk about my company plans at the same time, because I really had kept it to myself until then, because I wanted to focus on healing. But when I kind of felt like I was a little bit out of the thick of it, I then started to talk about it. And I started to put it out there because I knew that once it's out there, I have to kind of follow through on it. So I started to tell my sort of my friends and my community, and like that really got me encouraged to kind of go full
speed. I got to tell you, I feel like I relate to you so much because the Beanie Sleeper came out of my hospitalization, and I had never made anything in my life.
Yeah.
I never held a needle and thread. I would be in college and have my mom bring my stuff home so she could sew something. That's how pathetic. But I'm just so impressed with that process because nobody said you couldn't do it.
Right.
You're
exactly.
Like, I don't know that I can't, so let me just do. And to me, that's just so impressive because it's full agency.
Yeah.
It's just full agency. Taking my medical, now my mental and my job, I'm taking full ownership of it. I love that. I really, really love it. How did you come up with stylist theme wardrobe?
So it's such a connection between what you wear and how you feel. And that's kind of what I wanted to embody. It just like really capture into this very small item of clothing that has the power to change how you perceive yourself through a time that is very traumatic, very scary, and very stressful. And just this idea that you could put on something like this and have, you know, your self-esteem boosted through your style. And so that's what I wanted to kind of give a message to anyone coming to our Instagram community, anyone coming to our website, or, you know, showing up and saying hi at a pop-up shop. Like, this is what I hope this will give you is stylist esteem. Yeah.
One thing I loved, and I said so in the promo, that you have evening wear, daily wear, you have a spring collection.
Yeah.
You don't just sell turbans. Right? You're selling almost the event of a turban.
Yeah.
I'm going out for an evening with my boyfriend or husband or an evening with the girls.
Yeah.
I have this kind of turban, maybe a little more flashy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to church or I'm going to the mosque.
Exactly.
I have this turban to wear. It's a little more conservative. I got to tell you, I don't see that anywhere. And I've reached out to a lot of stores because I also want them to carry Beanie Sleeper.
Yeah.
But I've never seen that. And I think that's what's so unique. And also, you do something with the knot that's very different. That I've never seen that either.
Oh.
Now, I think that's incredible. And it's a specific knot that you designed, right?
Yeah, it's basically just this type of silhouette, which honestly, I was inspired when I And this is kind of a little life hack for anyone going through something like a diagnosis or something similar that is like you have to find inspiration from around yourself. I actually made an inspo board, and it had a bunch of quotes that inspired me, but then it also had pictures of women who were not necessarily cancer survivors, but they were maybe, you know, characters from a movie, characters from a music video, or like, you know, different actresses that had a look that I wanted to emulate. And so a number of my fashion icons at that time became Grace Kelly and Audrey Hepburn, who had just the most iconic, you know, turban silhouette look sort of attached to their image even now. And so that's kind of how that knot look is, you know, sort of tied into, is this silhouette that looks good on just about everyone. I mean, honestly, I never wore these type of caps before chemo, and I really questioned, hey, does this look good on me? And that one sort of style, that one silhouette, is something that translates on everyone. And that's why I chose that.
It's really, I mean, it honestly really is beautiful. And you get it in all different fabrics.
Yeah.
I mean, which I thought was really amazing that it just translates to all types of fabrics. I thought that was really great. So what's next for you?
So what's next is, I think we want to really explore more specialty items. And there's a number of ways that I want to come support women and their scalp issues, especially as you mentioned, like, you know, there's different seasons and occasions and things like that, because we dress differently for everything. Women have an outfit for every single possible imaginable situation. And so you should have a turban for that, you know? But then there's also a lot of sort of wear and tear that our scalps go through. And I want to create more turbans that address that issue. But in the meantime, what the first step of that journey into more specialty products is our couture collection. And that's something that, you know, is going to be taking place every season. We'll have like one or two styles that drop, and they'll be all handmade, very limited edition, and very special, very inspired by something in the world around us according to each season that we experience together.
I love that. I love how you thought this out. I love that it's so much more than a turban.
Yeah.
It's so much more than something you just wear.
Yeah.
It's, I just think it means more than anything else I've seen out there. And I just think it's fabulous that you did that.
Thank
and
you.
It came out of a true necessity for you. It came out of a need, not to just cover your head, but to feel beautiful.
Yeah.
And to
likewise,
feel desirable.
Yeah. And what you're doing is the same. It's adding dignity to a situation where no one thought to put it there before, you know? And that's so important. I think people in that situation need it the most. And I love what you've created. And honestly, like, I think my husband is probably going to steal this, because he runs like very cold. And so now I can just like blast the AC and I can have him wear this all the time around the house and just post pictures on Instagram of him wearing it.
Please do.
He's watching this. So he knows, he's hearing me from the other room.
Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. And we're going to wind down now, but I just want to say thank you. I'm going to thank you several times during this closing, but thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Yeah.
I was so excited to hear your story. And I got to say, I usually come up with something that is something like a through line of what we talked about. And I think your through line for this whole thing was of service.
Yeah.
Of service to your family, to your religion, to your whole being, and then to the government, and then of service to yourself during your treatment, and then your service through this business, because you are making yourself happy and you're bringing joy and happiness to other. I'm going to say this is of service. That's your through line for this. And thank you so much. So I want to give a big thanks to Sonia for the huge cuddle today. Your husband is very lucky. You're an excellent cuddler. I appreciate that. And then I want to thank everybody out there for your continued support for what we're doing here with the cancer community and other communities that we support with Sleeping with Ben. Sonia, how can people get a hold of you? What's the best way for them to reach you?
Please join our community on Instagram at this account, at StylistSteam. You can also follow me at NYManikin. Feel free to slide into my DMs, ask me any questions about style, fashion, hair loss, whatever it is that you want, relationship advice, I'm here for it. And then my email address should also be in my Instagram bio. So if you need that, feel free.
I'll put that in the show notes as well. I just wanted you to be able to say it. So, and also, I'm looking for guests. I want people like Sonia out there who need, you know, you may not think people want to hear about it, but I'm telling you, there's so much more than your diagnosis and your cancer journey that can really spark things in people and really help them to do more than what they maybe thought they could. Right? Because sometimes, as she said, she was treated like her disease, and she is so much more than that, as you can see. So if you'd like to be on my on Sleeping Ben, if you want to be sleeping with Ben, please slide into my DMs. Please reach out at Beanie Sleeper. Please email me, beaniesleeper@gmail.com. And that would be great. So just, again, thank you. I think I lost her. I feel her spinning. But thank you so much, Sonia, for this incredible I did lose her. But, Sonia, thank you so much for this. It was such an amazing, amazing time. I really appreciate it. Bye, everybody. I will see you next time. Ciao.